Hello, my name is Michael Kent, and this is Toxic Schlock. Hello, and welcome to another episode of Toxic Schlock, a horror film podcast out of Richmond, Virginia, where I talk to artists about slashers, creature features, paranormal occurrences, and all of the things that go bump in the night, and how it impacted their lives. Today on the show, we've got Clayton Burgess of Satan Satyrs and the legendary Electric Wizard. But before we get to that, if you want to support this show, please give us a rating, subscription, and a review on iTunes, or a subscription at Google Play Music. Those kind of things really help this show in a really big, big way. If you don't use either of those, please just do me a favor and tell a friend who likes horror movies or underground music, or anyone who you think might be interested in the show. If you want to get in touch with me or have any suggestions for future guests, feel free to contact me on the Toxic Schlock Facebook page, or you can shoot me an email at toxicschlockpodcast@gmail.com. I can also be found on Instagram and Twitter at Toxic Schlock. All right, now that we got all that out of the way, today on the show, we have Clayton Burgess of Satan Satyrs and Electric Wizard. Clayton first came on my radar in 2013 when I was home for the summer in North Carolina, and I caught Satan Satyrs at a nondescript house show. And I was really impressed at the time by their mixture of motorheady punk metal, doom metal, psychedelia, and a little bit of 70s glam and hard rock. Since that time, they've really started to blow up. Also, very importantly, Clayton has also joined the legendary, amazing British stoner metal band Electric Wizard and played on their killer new album, Wizard Bloody Wizard. Both Electric Wizard and Satan Satyrs incorporate a heavy influence of classic exploitation and horror cinema, so I was really kind of excited to talk to Clayton about his focus film pick, the 1962 deep-cut cult classic Carnival of Souls. This is a movie that's been on my radar for a couple years now, but after finally watching it, it's now in my mind an all-time classic. Clayton has an interesting perspective on horror that I think is very different than a lot of other people I talk to, a lot of horror buffs, a lot of people who I even talk to on this show, so I had a blast with him talking about Hammer horror films, Christopher Lee, Mario Bava, and a lot of things of that nature. We've got a pretty clean record on this episode in terms of corrections, and Clayton really didn't want to ruin the ending of Carnival of Souls for the listeners, so we stayed pretty spoiler-free for this episode. That being said, I do encourage you to give the movie a shot before listening further. It can be found in both black and white and in color on YouTube. Don't tell anyone, though. I specifically recommend the black and white version, but I honestly do enjoy the surreal color palette of the colorized version as well. I had a great time talking with Clayton just a few hours before the record release show for Satan Splatter's new split with Windhand, and I want to go and apologize for the occasional interjections of music in the background. Windhand was sound checking while we did the interview on the back patio of the Broadberry, but I also think it wasn't too terribly overbearing. But I digress. Thanks again for listening to Toxic Schlock. Now, sit back, dim the lights, and enjoy my conversation with Clayton Burgess talking about Carnival of Souls. All right, I'm sitting down right now with Clayton Burgess from Satan Satyrs. How you doing, man?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So, you know, we start the show always off with a section called History of Violence. Do you remember the first horror movie you ever saw or your first introduction to the genre?
As far as my personal journey with horror films, it's definitely started with a Dracula film.
Which one?
You know, I think I remember, like, being young and seeing, like, Coppola's Dracula.
Okay.
On TV, maybe, and maybe renting it from the store or whatever. And that kind of planted the seed of an obsession with, like, Dracula and vampires.
Was Dracula your guy?
Oh, yeah.
That was your monster as a kid?
Still to this day, that's the monster I identify with the most. But, that definitely planted the seed. And then from there, I got into, the Hammer stuff.
Okay,
from
cool.
From there, yeah.
Now, have you kind of pretty much always, so this is, like, when you were a kid and you've always kind of followed with it since?
Oh, definitely. It's never left me. It must have been 13, 14 when I started getting into this stuff. And it's just been, like, a part, kind of woven into my personality ever since. No.
So have you always kind of, with genre-wise, have you always kind of gravitated more towards the 70s?
Yeah, yeah.
60s Hammer kind of stuff?
Definitely, because, it, like I said, at first it was like an obsession with, like, vampires and Dracula, and it wasn't necessarily with film, because I would read books, I would read historical documents on, like, Vlad the Impaler and stuff, so mm-hmm. I was really into that, but when that wasn't enough, I had to branch out and get more Dracula. When the straight Dracula films weren't enough, I had to get into the more exploitation ones, you know? Yeah. I remember distinctly renting Dracula AD 1972
mm-hmm.
because I had already seen all the other Dracula films, and even though it seemed kind of hokey to me, I still needed to see something new. And that was a turning point for me, because I realized that there was, like, not only did I like vampires, but I liked this whole format of the 70s exploitation mm-hmm. sort of film. That was like a turning point for not just appreciation of that the thematics of it, but also just the genre as a whole, you know?
So is Christopher Lee your guy, kind of? Is that your Dracula?
Without a doubt. That's number one favorite Dracula right there.
Yeah, he's like one of those guys, you know, I kind of didn't get into his horror stuff, you know, until later on, you know, so, you know, I was, you know, it was like the guy from, like, Lord of the Rings or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, well, I knew that, and even, I guess he was in a Star Wars or two when I was a kid.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, that I was very, very much into that. Like, that's the quintessential Dracula to me, over Lugosi or anything like that. That's my personal taste.
Yeah, I feel like the Christopher Lee one is, like, kind of like, it's just like the taking what worked with Lugosi and then, like, really just putting his own taste into it. That's so British, too.
Yeah. Very British, very British. And just that, his presence paired with the production value of the Hammer Studios, it's just, it can't be beat. Those films are timeless to me. They always hit the spot, you know? I mean, it maybe it could have been more violent or more sexual or whatever, more exploitative, but I like the atmosphere. I like the gothic
horror.
Yeah,
the gothic.
That's
gothic
my forte,
feel.
You know. That's what I like the most, you know.
So after you kind of got into that stuff pretty heavily, did you like this kind of the 80s kind of stuff, or were you just more into, like, the more gothic?
That's the thing.
More British.
Even to this day, I never really ventured beyond the 70s, and I'm not, I mean, that if you're like a horror film fan, I know I'm missing out on a lot,
yeah.
But it's just,
you kind of find that era, and you're
yeah,
really
you just find that nook, and it's your thing, you know? I like the 60s stuff, even the late 50s through the early 70s. Like, to me, even in the later 70s, it gets a bit too, like, gory and
getting towards that slashery.
Yeah. I mean, I like atmosphere, and I like the archetypal elements of horror, like castles and bats and cobwebs and things. So I don't have anything against the more graphic stuff mm-hmm. that came later, but I'm very much, that's just my atmosphere that I like.
The more exploitative and
the earlier stuff
kind of
yeah.
feel. Yeah, I feel like it's almost like, also with like 70s horror, it's like a bottomless well. You can like
very
constantly
so.
Keep finding stuff. You know, it's almost like how I've been listening to like 80s punk and hardcore since I was
yeah.
you know, 13. I'm still discovering
exactly.
bands from 1982.
It's,
like.
it is comparable to music, because you'll have the bands that had the best production and the best promotion and the best record labels at the top, which we all know. And then, of course, you go back and you discover the ones that didn't really make it. It's the same thing with movies. Now, you have to watch a lot of really bad films
yeah.
if you're going to get that obsessed, but you know,
you
I mean, I
have to earn it.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Like,
you have to
pay your dues watching some shitty movies.
Exactly. You have to dig through the shit to get to the gems.
Yeah, that's the goal. Now, do you do you watch any new movies more for the most part, or do you just kind of zero in?
No. I just don't see anything that really interests me, and if it doesn't grab me from the poster, then why bother? You know, I just like what I like. Plus, I'm not a huge fan of movie theaters.
Oh, really?
I like being alone.
The solitary element of it.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm not against modern films. I don't have anything, just because it's modern doesn't mean it's going to be bad to me. But it's just, if something grabs me, it grabs me. If it doesn't grab me, then I just don't bother, you know?
Yeah, I think even a lot of the newer stuff, even though, you know, there's, you know, plenty of movies that I like, I think a lot of times it can feel like just like it's imitating something else that came before it.
Sometimes it's better to watch the original than the wallpaper version, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think something like the Hammer Dracula, that's like one of the, like, that was a cool era when they were cool doing interesting remakes and stuff, rather than, but it was like very like their own unique feel to it.
Yeah, it's like, what I love about those films is like, there's like a really, if you watch all those Draculas in a line, there's like a very slight semblance of continuity, but they all stand on their own. It's like you can watch any of those films and the Dracula in that film is the Dracula in that film. You know, it's not, and then the next film it's a different setup, it's a different story, different characters. It's just like,
it's like a base character. It's like almost like James Bond. Like,
exactly.
You had this like stock character, and then you can kind of like build around.
Exactly. I like stuff like that. Yeah.
All right. So for your focus film pick, you did 1962's Carnival of Souls. Mm-hmm. Could you give me a brief synopsis of the movie?
Well, so we have this young lady, Mary Henry. And in the start of the film, she's in a car with her friends, and they're driving, and they pull up to a stop, and another car of boys challenges them to a race. They end up crashing during this race and falling into a river, and she apparently is the only survivor.
You gotta get into spoilers too.
if you haven't seen this movie yet, you know, I won't give away the ending.
Yeah.
But she has to go on this journey to a new town to start a new life for herself. And she's being haunted by some sort of ghoul. And he keeps popping up as she's trying to establish this new life for herself. She can't shake this kind of morbid feeling that's been following her throughout. I could go on with the film, like, of all the layers to it, you know?
So what was the first time you saw it? Do you remember?
I must have been, like, probably still a teenager when I saw it, but I remember distinctly watching it for the first time because it's not often when you watch a film and you turn it off and you're like, wow. That film really resonated with me the first time I watched it.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about it beforehand. It must have been like a random pick for me. But it really resonated with me, and it was something that I could rewatch multiple times and still get the same feeling. It didn't go stale.
Yeah.
You know?
Full disclosure, I had never seen it. I had heard the name. It's like one of those ones I've been kind of sitting on my list for a while to watch. And I was just blown away. It glued me to my, like, it was a little slow at first, like when it's like setting it up. And the way it kind of like jumps straight into it was weird. Like how there's like no like opening credits. It just like opens.
Yeah.
Like the cold open.
It's an odd little film. I mean, I like it in the sense that it's this like small little low budget drive-in horror film from the early 60s. It just captures that slice of Americana at the time. It captures it perfectly. But even though it's like some drive-in exploitation film, for some reason I see so many levels to it that resonate with me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if that was intentional, when they made the film, or I'm just reading too much into it. But from my personal experience, I just get so much out of it that I can watch it again and again.
It almost feels like this like glorious accident at times. Like sometimes I wonder, like director Harvey, Herc Harvey.
Yeah, Herc Harvey.
I almost wonder, like, did he mean to have it become as deep as it was, or was it like just an accident of creating this beautiful film? His only film.
Yeah, yeah. Lead lady Candace Hillegoss didn't do much.
Yeah.
And she is just, to me, spellbinding. I don't know what it is, but you just, you're kind of enraptured with this character.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, me watching it as a teenager, I could relate with her so much in the sense that there's this theme with her of isolation.
Mm-hmm.
And she's gone through this traumatic event, yet she's pushing everybody away, you know? Whether it's her neighbor or she's leaving her hometown, you know, she's going off on her own. She's very cold and distant. And it to me, as a teenager, I could relate to those things. I could relate to, like, the sort of isolation, the feeling of cutting yourself off emotionally or whatever from other people, you know. I think as you grow older, you develop socially and emotionally, whatever. But at the time, it was very profound to me, you know?
Yeah, and, I think it. Most people would probably say, and I agree, you know, it's definitely, like, a lot of it's, like, I think, allegory for, like, mental health and for trauma.
Yeah.
And I love, like, the way that people interact with her of, like, thinking she's going crazy. It's, like, a great, like, statement on also just, like, not being heard and loneliness and, like, feeling alone.
Exactly. And then when you're at your most desperate state, you want that connection, but you've already driven everybody away, as she did in the, you know, when her slimy neighbor is, like, trying to hit on her the whole time and she's batting him off. And then when she's having this breakdown, he doesn't want anything to do with her.
Yeah, he, like, turned off the light on instantly.
So it's just, like, it's very relatable, you know? And actually, personally for me, I remember as a kid, or as a teenager, around the same age, I was in a car accident, which, thankfully, nothing serious happened to me or anybody else involved. But it could have been way worse. You know, the car was flipped.
Oh, wow.
But the thing was, it was just a bunch of kids doing something stupid, like going to score some pot or something, whatever. And it was just like, it made me realize, like, it was a pivotal moment in my youth, because I thought, is it worth it to die with just anybody?
Mm-hmm.
Just some kids, you know, that you smoke pot with or whatever? Yeah. And it made, at that point in my life, it made me way more introverted.
Mm-hmm.
It was a switch for me, that kind of traumatic incident. And so when I saw this film and it was the same sort of thing on screen, I connected with it right away.
Yeah.
And I just love the imagery. I love it in black and white.
I've seen it in both versions.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't want to see it in color.
Oh, really?
To be honest. I can imagine it's like, I don't know, the shadows just.
It's such a literally dark movie.
Dark for sure. And beautiful cinematography with the silhouette of the Saltaire fairgrounds that was that where they shot it for the carnival sequences.
Mm-hmm.
I was just enraptured by it. The scenery of the Utah salt flats, the desolation, the morbid atmosphere of it. I was obsessed. So much so that the first time we ever played in Utah, we stopped.
Really?
We stopped there. The original Saltaire that was in, I don't know if it was the original or the second one, whichever one was in that film, isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
It was burned down. It was arson.
Mm-hmm.
I think back in the 70s or something. But still, it was important enough to me to go there as a sort of pilgrimage. You know,
totally.
Just to walk on the salt flats and to imagine, is that the mountain range I saw in that one shot in that one scene? You know, it was very important for me to go there when we first played Salt Lake City.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you don't really get a chance to go see stuff like that in person, you know? Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much other, settings in films I've seen. When I last time I was in London, I tried to go to Highgate Cemetery, because, of course, they filmed a lot there with the Hammer stuff, and I think other films, too. I think the most notable one is... Taste the Blood of Dracula,
mm-hmm.
when they're performing their ritual in the church and they're in the graveyard. Those scenes, this is in the Highgate Cemetery, but didn't manage to get in. I think that section is so old they just shut it off.
Oh really?
So it's not very often you get to like actually be on location for something you've only seen on screen.
Yeah, you know? Especially something that you've seen in it, which probably looks very different.
Yeah.
than it does now.
Yeah, but still, you get the atmosphere. Just standing there, knowing the importance, the personal importance, whatever this film has meant to you personally, and you're just standing there soaking it all up. That's how I felt when we went to Saltaire.
And it's one of those movies, it's impossible to watch it without thinking about the things that borrowed so heavily from it. I mean, I was watching it. I mean, obviously, like you watch that, and you're like, oh, Eraserhead, like that's yeah, like so much, like I've not a bad way, yeah. But it's.
Definitely. I've wondered that too. I was like, is that? I don't know. Eraserhead is its own beast, but
yeah.
At the same time, there is a kind of slight surreal element to Carnival of Souls.
Very
you know?
Dreamlike.
Very dreamlike, and I love. The soundtrack, so
the organ,
yeah,
music,
so just hypnotizing,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, and definitely also Night of Living Dead, obviously that's another one, you know, like even down to the ghoul design, you know, just like that white caked on mm-hmm. makeup with the black circles around the eyes.
Yeah,
I thought it was interesting that that old Herc played the ghoul.
Yeah,
which
yeah.
I thought was really cool.
That looked like a lot of fun.
Yeah, I thought that was a cool way. And it was, the budget ranged from about, you know, hear different accounts, like $17,000 to $30,000.
Yeah, could you imagine? I mean,
literally nothing.
Yeah.
And Candace Hillegas, she was the only trained actress, or any person with any acting credits
yeah,
or anything.
Yeah, and she really didn't do much after that. I think she's in, like, one other film, but like I said, I was kind of so connected to her
mm-hmm.
in that film. I wish she would have done more. You know?
Yeah.
She just has this. She has this quality which was just very. Enrapturing, to me. You know, but I don't think she did too much more after.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, Herc Harvey, he just did industrial educational films.
Was that so?
Mm-hmm, that's
yeah.
It was a.
It was from Kansas City or something like that.
Yeah.
Right? So they filmed a lot of it in Kansas.
Yeah, it was in Kansas and then the
and then Utah.
And then
yeah.
Utah, which is like the two locations they use. It was made by the Cintron Corporation, which is just like some industrial company.
Wow.
And so they didn't actually even have like a real producers. It was his educational industrial film.
If you take all that into consideration, it's remarkable how it's like stood the test of. Five decades.
Yeah.
Test of time for five decades, and
I watched it and it felt so new.
Yeah.
Like, I felt glued to my seat. You know, maybe things I was taking at the time was helping with that, but
yeah.
like
yeah.
it was just like I was like melting into the seat and just like
yeah.
that tension it built.
It has a timeless quality for sure because it's so, it is so kind of dreamlike and surreal. You can watch it at any time, you know. It is a bit slow by modern standards, I suppose, but if you just let yourself be taken by the film, then it's worth it.
Yeah, let yourself be hypnotized by those
exactly.
by the organs.
Yeah.
You know, it was filmed in 3 weeks, and one of the fun facts I found was that Herc Harvey, he had to pay out of his pocket $17 to replace the bridge that was damaged.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
that bumped
funny.
Up the budget a little bit.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go to that bridge, but I feel like it's not really near anything. It would be a major detour just to
yeah.
see a bridge. But I would love to see that someday if I was ever in the area.
Yeah, to quote, I looked at Roger Ebert, his review of it, is a quote he said, It ventures to the edge of camp, but never strays across the line, taking itself with an eerie seriousness.
Wow, that's really that's a good way to put it.
I don't always agree with him, but like that's I think eerie seriousness. Like it's not, there's nothing funny or light about that
it's
movie.
It's not like bleh, you know what I mean? It's like it is what it is. It's almost, I'm not gonna say undefinable, but in terms of horror films that were coming out of the time, you couldn't stick it in a certain place. It's not a fucking monster movie. It's not a sci-fi movie. You know, it's a one of a kind. I think even by today's standards, I think it's unique.
Yeah, actually, and I'm ashamed to say I have a lot of black spots in my brain of 60s horror, and that's I'm still
I mean, there's so much.
I just saw Black Sunday for the first time.
That's
a whole other episode.
That was another contender of mine. Another film I've been watching since like 16, 17.
Yeah,
and never gets old. It's like, it's one of the great horror films of all time, and I think it's the best Bava film for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I just love it. Another film where the black and white film makes the film.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's like, it's not something that was like, I mean, yes, it was in black and white because of what was available at the time, but also like, it's like a color scheme they picked.
it works. It works because it takes you out of the real even further. It takes you into the surreal. It takes you into the dream or the nightmare.
Yeah, and some of those movies, you know, like Carnival of Souls, I feel like they use black and white just as much as like Dario Argento and Suspiria use colors. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like really like using that
power. Yeah, and that was, we've talked about Suspiria, that was the intent of using those colors. That was intentional, you know?
Yeah.
It gave a different effect. Also good.
Yeah.
So it's like, that's why I think like, Black Sunday, Carnival of Souls, a lot of these other early, like, early 60s black and white films, like City of the Dead, a.k.a. Horror Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Marvelous film. I love that film. With Christopher Lee. Just awesome, like, ritual scenes and graveyard scenes. Foggy, spooky, Halloween time kind of movie, you know? I have a soft spot for those early 60s films. I mean, I like the tits and blood shit, you know? But my heart is really with the stuff that came out before that was acceptable.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where they had to rely on the atmosphere and real horror elements, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I guess, you know, also that kind of gothic.
Exactly, gothic horror. Yeah, again, back to my roots with, you know, reading Bram Stoker's Dracula and Carmilla and stuff like that. That kind of literature got me interested in gothic horror and therefore horror movies and exploitation movies, 60s, 70s stuff.
Would you say that a lot of this kind of stuff has influenced, you know, the kind of either visual aesthetic or music aspect?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt. I mean, even on our first, I remember making our first demo tape, and I ripped off a still from Black Sunday on it. Even our first T-shirt was Barbara Steele.
Oh yeah.
So, it without a doubt, that's within us, you know, within me. Other elements have come to play over the years, but that's like those horror films and the visuals of it, the posters, the memorabilia of it was very important in the early days.
Yeah.
In the genesis of the band, for sure.
Yeah, and you definitely seen the new Electric Wizard record too.
I mean, that was another, being a fan of Electric Wizard as a kid in high school was another gateway into more films, you know? So like, I was already into some horror films, and then I got into Electric Wizard, and the floodgates were open.
Yeah, I mean, definitely music, and I mean, like kind of one of the big things of this podcast is tying together like underground music and horror and like the ways that they really like intermingle.
Oh yeah, it's pretty prevalent with a lot of bands,
especially if you like stoner metal. If you like thrash, you know, kind of like show you different eras.
I mean, if the most obvious choice is Black Sabbath.
Yeah,
you know, that's kind of the most obvious influence of horror films to metal music, you know, or hard rock or whatever. But and then it all goes on from there.
All right, cool. That's awesome, man. So next we have a short questionnaire. Do you remember the last horror movie you watched? It doesn't have to be a new movie, but just like the last one you kind of sat down.
Yeah, the last one I watched actually was kind of an obvious one for my taste. It was Werewolves on Wheels.
Werewolves on Wheels?
Yeah, yeah. Big film in my teenage years. Oh, okay. Big film for me. If just to give a quick synopsis of it, if you haven't seen it, this biker gang. And before I start, this film, Werewolves on Wheels, one of my personal favorites.
Mm-hmm. I've got to check this out.
It's an incredible film. It's made really well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a great biker film and a great horror film. It's not like a somewhat okay horror, somewhat okay biker, but it's great in both regards. Mm-hmm. It can work. It can work for either.
I gotta see if that's on Shudder.
It's out there. I think I streamed it the other day. I have a DVD of it that I had since I was a kid, but I think it's on Amazon or something. But it's just like a gang of bikers who, for whatever fucking reason, end up at this commune of this cult who kind of, like, drugs them and, like, puts a curse on them.
Mm-hmm.
And then as they're going out doing their shit, you know, riding around, one by one they start, you know, they start dying and start getting murdered in weird, gruesome ways. And then, surprise, surprise, there's Werewolves on Wheels by the end of it.
I gotta check this out. I'm I'm a werewolf guy.
Oh yeah, I like werewolf films too.
Yeah,
but this is like, and I'm big into biker films.
Yeah,
so this is the best of both worlds.
Yeah, because the whole bike exploitation stuff and then the werewolves. That sounds awesome.
It's essential to me.
Mm-hmm.
It's essential to me.
No. Have you ever turned off or walked out of a movie, like a horror movie that's just like too unsettling or?
You know, I off the top of my head, I can't really think of one except when I was like 7 years old and like Jurassic Park was too scary for me. You know, like that was the last I remember because I'm not into like thrill ride movies necessarily.
Yeah. Like the cannibal stuff gets to me. I'm like the Cannibal Holocaust. Yeah.
I mean, I've seen definitely some disturbing films, but I always try to tough it out. But I honestly, the last time was like I was a kid watching Jurassic Park. I think the Velociraptor scenes were too much for me.
You're not the first person to bring that up. One of the first things to like really freak them out. So do you have a favorite kill or scare sequence? Or like, you know, I know this is a little bit more, you know, moody gothic stuff.
Yeah.
It's like what you.
You know, when you say that, like, the first thing that really pops to mind, because, like, you're right, I'm not really, like, a shock thrill kind of, like, super violent kind of stuff, but I always remember the scene in Scars of Dracula where he, like, it's like, he goes to the Dracula goes to the bed and he takes out a fucking dagger and, like, starts stabbing that girl. It's, like, so violent. Her hammer, and Christopher Lee's face is so horrifying as he does it when he's like taking this massive dagger, like Dracula's like sacrificing this girl in that bed. And also in that scene, there's also like they go into the church and the whole congregation is dead because of Dracula. That's pretty like it's kind of dark for the Hammer films at the time, but.
Honestly, you know, after watching that Carnival Assaults, that part when she goes on the bus is like is kind of in my top list.
That's creepy.
That moment, I like legitimately was like, God.
That's creepy. All those people in the fucking makeup. Yeah.
And they keep just like, right when you think that movie's over, when you go back to Carnival Assaults, it just like keeps going in a cool way. Where you just like, it does not let up even when you think it does.
So do you mind if we take a quick 1 second break?
Yeah, sure, man.
I'm gonna run to the bathroom. I had to.
Yeah, we can take 5. Yeah, we're just about done. we're back. So for the last question, I have a new section called Starter Pack. Okay. If you had to pick like five movies that you're trying to introduce somebody to what your ideal horror kind of canon is, what would you say?
Oh, okay. Gosh. There's got to be a Hammer Dracula in there, so my favorite probably would be... Let's see. Let's just say Taste the Blood of Dracula. Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, one of my all-time favorites. Christopher Lee is in it. It's just some weird fucking kind of trippy German film.
Okay.
Very visually... stimulating. So Torture Chamber of Dr. Sadism, Black Sunday,
yeah,
without a doubt. I mean, of course, Carnival, Carnival of Souls, and shit, what else is there? Is that four?
Yeah, it's four.
Okay. Gosh, I hate to sound redundant, but like Werewolf on Wheels has like, it has a great like, I don't know, it just has a soft spot for me. It has a
great, check that one out.
It has a great ritual scene, which when I was a kid, I would always watch films for like the great like satanic rituals and shit, like hooded robes and stuff like that. Like, just off the top of my head, that's like the top for me. And then, but then, if I can like add to that, like the American International stuff. I love a lot of the Poe adaptations they did. Mm-hmm. The Mask of the Red Death is one of my favorites of all time with Vincent Price. It's like stuff like that, and then
what's the one with like the guillotine?
Oh, Pit in the Pendulum.
Pit in the Pendulum.
Yeah, that one's great. Vincent Price and Barbara Steele in the same film, and then the Pendulum. And then the atmosphere of the castle and dungeons and all that. And then of course I love like the Paul Naschy stuff, the werewolf stuff that he was in. I mean, to be honest with you, like I used to be like really obsessed with watching films and watching more and more and more. Over the years, life just kind of gets in the way. I watch other things now. Like I watch a lot of like old pro wrestling. I'm really into like 70s and 80s and stuff like that. So you know, I don't watch as much as I used to, but just like even just talking about it now brings back so much. It's just like ingrained in me, you know. It's like gosh, I used to watch so many horror films as a kid.
Yeah.
And you know, I still do when I can.
Yeah,
I
you know, but you know, also, you know.
Yeah.
A lot of times I'll kind of go on flings with certain genres or eras even, and then I'll, you know, kind of dabble in, but then I'm going to come back.
I mean, there's always...
Same with music, too.
Yeah, yeah. With music, there's, like, always... I think, like music, I always come back to the solid...
Foundational.
Yeah, the foundational... The foundational movies of music, just like the classics that can never be, that never get old, you know?
Yeah.
Like the Hammer stuff, the AIP stuff. That's really my bread and butter, you know?
Awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, man. I really appreciate it. I really had a good time talking about, you know, a lot of our stuff. You know, I love 80s horror.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's fun to get a chance to talk about, you know, a different era that I think. A lot of people don't talk about it as much. It doesn't have as much of a fandom.
I can imagine, if you're like interviewing like metal artists and stuff, like I know like a lot of the metal imagery definitely would lean towards like more slasher and more like violent stuff. But I mean, just my taste is just more, like I said, atmospheric and. I like meeting other people who like that kind of stuff too.
Absolutely, man. Do you have anything you want to plug before we wrap up?
Well, since we're here at our record release show with Windhand, we have our split record out on Relapse Records, and we're
split 12-inch, right?
Yeah, split 12-inch. It's on CD and whatever format you like. But yeah, we're here to rock that out today to play that, and Yeah, we're really proud of that record, so go check it out. It's awesome. Good for both bands.
Yeah, I'm really stoked to hear it. Yeah, thank cool. you, man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much again to Clayton for coming on the show. Make sure to pick up a copy of Satan Stater's new split 12-inch with Windhand, and also check out Electric Wizard's newest album, Wizard, Bloody Wizard. Thank you as always to Stephanie for scoring the show. You can check out their music at stephanielamborghini.bandcamp.com. On the next episode of Toxic Schlock, I will be talking with PJ Russo of the New Jersey surf punk mutants, Nightbirds. And we are talking about his focus film, the 1981 piece of perfection that is The Evil Dead. PJ is someone I've known for a while now, and I'll go out there and say I love his band about as much as I love Sam Raimi's classic film, so this is a real treat for me. Thank you so much for listening. Once again, be sure to pass on word about this show to your friends who you think may be into it. I will see you guys again in 2 weeks. Stay spooky. Good night.